Thank you very much for joining me here this evening, sitting in for George Norrie. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. If you like the strange and supernatural, you can check out my show 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight. We talk about all aspects of the strange and the supernatural, and Tuesday nights we look at true crime. So if you'd like to join us, check out darknessradio.com. You can stream the show from anywhere, live from our website. And as soon as our show's over, you can keep listening, because right after Darkness Radio, the best in overnight talk radio takes over. George Norrie and Coast to Coast AM can be heard from that live stream 7 nights a week as well. And while you're there, check out our live chat room. It's going on right now during the show. You can go join in our live chat room, talk with other like-minded individuals from all around the world, and hear and share your paranormal experiences right there. Our guest this evening, Ursula Bielski, is a Chicago paranormal folklorist. She's collected stories and her own experiences. She leads one of the greatest haunted tours in the United States, ChicagoHauntings.com. You can check out her website there for information. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the other haunted locations throughout Illinois, some of the great folklore and history surrounding these stories. One of the more popular stories and one of the most famous haunted locations, urban legend or not, is Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. I remember as a teenager sneaking in there and had this amazing encounter. My buddies and I made our way down this dark, dusty road to get there and to walk this whole route. We got very near the cemetery, and we'd heard stories of not just the ghosts you had to be fearful of, but that a lot of partying teenagers and people jumping you, taking your money, trying to take your beer, whatever you might have with you. So we were on edge. Well, I remember working our way through there when through the woods, I hear this deep barrel voice go, "Get out." Just scared the living hell out of me. We froze and stood there watching to see what was coming through the woods. And this voice just repeated again, "Get out." We turned around and, like Scooby-Doo, legs spinning in the air, boom, took off like a shot, tripping over each other like the Three Stooges the entire way to get out of the stupid park, ran to our car, hopped in the car, took off running. And that was it. It wasn't until a few years later when I was talking about this experience, I ran into a cop from the local area, and he was telling us about this time that he had been hiding in the woods waiting for kids and teenagers and partiers to come through there. And he saw a group of three or four teenagers coming through, and he stepped through the woods and started yelling, "Get out," and how they ran and bumped into each other, ran over each other, practically killed themselves to get out of the park. And I realized we'd been set up. But that doesn't mean there's not other strange things. As a matter of fact, one of the most famous ghost photos ever taken was taken at Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. We'll talk with Ursula Bielski about that story next on Coast to Coast AM. My guest this evening is Ursula Bielski. Her interests in Chicago ghost hunting began at a very young age. As she mentioned in the first hour, she grew up in a haunted house on Chicago's north side and received an early education in Chicago history from her father, a Chicago police officer. He introduced Ursula to the ghosts at Graceland Cemetery, Montrose Point, and the old lockup at the storied Maxwell Street Police Station. Tonight, we're discussing many of the hauntings and famous stories that surround the Chicagoland area, rich in history and scary. Nonetheless, we're going to talk about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery now. I talked about my one weird experience there, and I know quite a few people have probably shared that experience of having the cops scare them more than anything paranormal, but there's a very famous photograph. Can you talk to us about that photograph? And we're going to try to get it up on the Coast to Coast Twitter feed and get that up to, so people can see that as well. But you know which photo I'm talking about, right, Ursula?
Of course, of course. This photograph appears on every top 10 list of ghost photos around the world, every top 3 list. And right, oftentimes the number one ghost photo ever taken. This is a photo that probably almost every one of your listeners has seen. It's a woman sitting on this tombstone base in a diaphanous gown, just sort of gazing off into the distance. And it's a very, looks like a real person sitting there. And this was supposedly taken by someone who didn't see anything there at the time. And it's really cool. I am friends with a photographer I've been for many years. She had written a long handwritten letter to me about 20 years ago. The photograph was taken on August 10th, 1991, during an outing of the Ghost Research Society, which is led by Dale Kaczmarek, one of the oldest and most active ghost hunting organizations in the world. And they had been out to Bachelor's Grove Cemetery one afternoon, and what Dale had done was to ask everyone who attended the meeting to go through the cemetery on their own with whatever equipment they had brought with them and to take photographs or record wherever they felt something. And Judy Huff, who took the photograph, was there with her sister. They had grown up being sensitive to the paranormal, and they were looking to get involved in paranormal investigation. So they had learned about Dale's group, and they had come to this meeting. They had gone through the cemetery with the only tool that they had, which was their sensitivity to the paranormal, which they shared with many of their family members that had gone before them. And so they went through the cemetery, and Judy had a camera that had infrared film in it. And she said when she took that photo, she just felt that she should take a picture there. And when she developed the film, of course, this was long before digital photography was common, she got this incredible image on the photo. And this is just great because for the first time ever at our Chicago Ghost Conference in October, I don't know, Dave, if you read about this that I posted, Judy's going to be at the Ghost Conference, and she's going to produce the negative for the very first time ever, which people wanted her to do for all of these years. And she never has because she felt it was very special. It was private. It was, you know, a moment for her. And she's going to come forth and bring the negative with her and also the paperwork from having it authenticated by several different photography film companies. On its authenticity, so that'll be really very cool.
But oh, that's going to be at the conference coming up in October?
That'll be, yeah. In fact, you don't know this yet, but you're going to interview her live on stage. <at the conference>.
Yay me! I always learn the things last. That's good to know. Just remind people, how can they find information about the conference and sign up and get tickets right. And hear this remarkable story?
Yeah, sure. ChicagoHauntings.com or ChicagoGhosts.com will take you to all the information and the ticket sales page for the Ghost Conference.
All right, so check it out, ChicagoHauntings.com. And again, you'll find all the information about Ursula, her books, and her lively tours of the undead streets of Chicago and the surrounding area. And you can find out about the conference that'll be taking place. You've got a lot of great celebrities that are going to be in for it and partaking in the event as well. So that'll be kind of a neat experience. And I'll be there. So come on out and get a chance to say hi. It'll be great to meet with everybody. So Bachelor's Grove, this photograph, this woman just kind of sitting there, that's been, again, like you said, one of the most famous ghost photographs out there. Why is this cemetery so popular on everybody's radar for investigating? Why is there so much history to this location, do you think?
It's an amazing place. It's very enigmatic. That's the word that people always use when they talk about it. And I came to learn about Bachelor's Grove as a Northsider because it's a far southwest side of Chicago location. I first learned about it when I was in college out in the western suburbs, and a lot of my classmates were from the south side, and I first learned these stories about Bachelor's Grove Cemetery, and I went out there to start investigating, you know, just before I started doing all of this work. And when I was an undergrad, I was a history major, and I had met a classmate who was a psychology student that was doing a lot of work in parapsychology. And he was setting up a series of photography experiments at Bachelor's Grove. And he invited me, knowing my interest in the paranormal, to do the background research on the history of the place. And so that's how I came to know Bachelor's Grove Cemetery in, I don't know, 1988, probably. And so over the course of probably 10 years, we did a series of photography experiments at Bachelor's Grove to determine whether photographs taken there are more anomalous than others. And we determined that they were, but mostly it was because more photographs than normal were washed out or blacked out. And so that was the anomaly that we established at Bachelor's Grove. So that's how I got to know about it. And I have been spending a lot of time at Bachelor's Grove over the last 30 years since then. And it is a very strange place. When I wrote my first book, Chicago Haunts, in the 1990s, the book's still out there in print, and you can find it, and it says that, you know, no houses ever existed at Bachelor's Grove, and nothing bad ever happened at Bachelor's Grove, because this is what I was told by local historians, active historians at the historical societies and what have you. There has been a long time setup of historians in the area to deter people from Bachelor's Grove, to tell people that no one ever lived here, nothing ever happened here. But looking into the history of the location over the last 20 years, it's a very, very different situation. There have been very strange things that have happened here over many years, more than a century. And we have even diaries, journals going back to the 19th century talking about experiences that people were having here. And for listeners that aren't familiar with the location, this is a 1-acre abandoned cemetery that is now literally out in the woods in the Forest Preserve District of Cook County. And as you mentioned, you have to walk down probably a quarter mile path through the woods to even get to the cemetery. And so it's out in the middle of nowhere, and it's, you know, surrounded by forest, and no one is quite sure what has led to the activity at this location. But almost everyone that you talk to who has any experience with the place or any sensitivity, as far as paranormal sensitivity, will tell you that it's not the cemetery, but it's the woods surrounding the cemetery that are the source of the activity.
Can I ask one thing? I know one of the stories I used to hear from Richard Crowe, the famed Chicago ghost hunter, was that there's been photographs of a ghost house that has appeared on that path. And sometimes it's on one side of the path, sometimes it's on the other side of the path, but there's claimed never to have been a house there. Are you familiar with that story, and have you seen any of these actual photographs?
Absolutely. The story of the vanishing house or the magic house at Bachelor's Grove, that's one of the most famous stories about the place. And supposedly people visiting there since probably the 1950s have seen this white farmhouse with a wraparound porch, a porch swing on the front porch, light burning behind heavy curtains. Again, like you said, have seen it on either side of the path, in the cemetery, across the creek, in the woods. And again, there were so many stories for so many years that no houses ever even existed here. And there were stories that grew up that this was the phantom house of a house that was burnt down after the owner of the house murdered his family with an axe and hanged himself in a tree outside of the cemetery. Well, actually, there were many, many houses in the woods at Bachelor's Grove. This was a thriving community of first English immigrants that came from the East Coast to settle during the settlement period in the early part of the 19th century. Many of them squatted in the area. There was a span of timber in the area, Bachelor's Grove, of course, and they had a lumber industry and then moved to Blue Island, which is the adjacent big city today. There were dozens of houses on the property. This was all farmland at the time. And it was only in the early 1920s, when the Forest Preserve District took it over, that they bought everyone out. And it wasn't like they forced everyone out and that's part of the haunting. They paid everyone handsomely. The last family that lived in the area, the Schmidt family, and you can see the remnants of their homestead off of the path in the woods. You can see still broken china, dishes, roofing tiles, bricks from their home. They were bought out for like $100,000 in like 1925 or something. So it was nothing like that, like everyone was forced off the property or anything. But there was a thriving community here. But along with the thriving community is a long legacy of really strange things that have gone on. There have been many murders in the woods. Oak Forest Hospital, which was the county hospital that was run for years until very recently adjacent to the property, there were many inmates in the hospital, patients in the hospital that were given weekend leave that rather than going home, maybe they didn't have a home, maybe they didn't want to go there, they would actually go and stay in the woods. And many people died of exposure or fighting or drug overdoses in the woods. We have friends that visit the cemetery all the time that grew up in the area that talk about finding dead bodies in the woods when they were kids growing up in the area. There was, famously, there was a mushroom hunter in the 1960s that found the body of a murdered woman in the woods in 1963. There was a murderer who was waiting trial for running over a man who was courting his ex-girlfriend, who was found shot to death at the entrance to the cemetery gate in the 1980s, Martin Myers. And his girlfriend was exonerated for the shooting because of threats that he had made to her in the past. There was a story that I found just a couple of years ago in the Tribune Archives, Chicago Tribune Archives, of a farmer that was walking through the area in 1915 and found a woman lashed to a fence by a rag tied around her neck. A woman in a white dress, literally tied to the fence by her neck. And this is right adjacent to Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. So there's a very dark history there. And historians in the area, like I said, have covered up this history, not wanting people to come there and further desecrate the area. So we don't really know what's going on there. A lot of researchers think that there is some sort of a curse on the area. Maybe there's some Native American connection, even though we don't see any Native American settlers in that section of the area. Maybe there's some connection to that. We don't know if there is some connection to ritual activity that occurred in the mid-20th century, although this activity goes much further back. Many visitors who are clairvoyant have said that there's a portal area in the area, so that there's a lot of different spirits and different entities that appear there because of this. There have been fairies sighted there. There have been little people sighted there. There have been ghost dogs, black dogs, strange ghost lights, apparitions of people, apparitions of animals, apparitions of houses, as you mentioned. It's an incredible place. It really is. It really deserves the reputation that it has.
Isn't that the cemetery that's got that kind of creepy blue ghost, what do you call it, the like statue standing there? Or is that one of the other cemeteries in Chicago?
Oh, that's Graceland Cemetery. The Reaper statue?
Right, it almost kind of looks like the thing from the outside of the Ouija board box, right?
Yeah. In fact, that was interesting because Bob Murch made that connection when he was here at the Ghost Conference last year. Bob Murch, the Ouija board expert of the world, had visited Graceland Cemetery and made that connection between the Statue of Death at Graceland Cemetery and the image on the Ouija board box. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a creepy-looking statue. I thought that was at Bachelor's Grove, but I get confused at all the weird stories. I mean, you've got a lot of haunted, weird cemeteries there. A couple of the listeners have hit me up, and I think we've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left here. But can you tell us a little bit about the bride?
Which bride?
The one, I'm guessing the one that they dug up in years after her death. And she,
yeah.
Right, yeah.
Oh, yeah, my gosh, that's such an old Chicago ghost story, and one that's, remained for all of his years. Julia Bacola was a young Italian girl that she lived on the Taylor Street, in the Taylor Street neighborhood, where the devil baby was supposedly born back in 1913. And she gave birth in 1921, and it was a stillbirth. And the mother passed away as well. And both the mother and child were buried at Mount Carmel Cemetery out in Hillside, and the baby was buried in her mother's arms. And immediately, Julia's mother began having nightmares that Julia was begging to be dug up. And these nightmares went on for 6 years, when finally she went to her parish priest and asked what she should do about these nightmares she'd been having. And the priest said that she should go ahead and exhume the grave to put her mind at rest. So they went out, her and the parish priest and the grave digger went out to Julia's grave, brought up the body, opened up the casket, and found that Julia, who had been buried 7 years earlier and not embalmed, was completely preserved. Looked like she was sleeping in her wedding dress in which she'd been buried. The baby, who had been buried in her arms, was completely decomposed. And this led to the Italian-American community in Chicago to proclaim Julia as a saint. Sainthood, one of the conditions is incorruptibility of the body after death. So
we'll talk more about more legends and stories like that. We have to take our break. We'll be back with Ursula Bielski here on Coast to Coast AM. I'll be back with you again tomorrow night. Hour one, the number one New York Times bestselling author, Brad Meltzer, will join me. And then for hours 2, 3, and 4, we'll have John Potash, his book, Drugs as Weapons Against Us, the CIA's Murderous Targeting of SDS, Panthers, Hendrix, Lennon, Cobain, Tupac, and Other Activists. That's tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, we're discussing the spirits of the Windy City, haunted Chicago, with our guest Ursula Bielski. If you've missed any part of tonight's show and you'd like to catch up, it's very simple. Just go to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com, and look at the insider page. Become an insider and join up for the year. It's literally 15 cents a day to get access to archives over 5 years. You get access to live chats with George Norrie and the other hosts of Coast to Coast AM, live chats with some of the best of the guests, and you get all the great news and content that's part of the site. You'll also find links to George Norrie's TV series Beyond Belief. And for those of you single and looking to find love in all the wrong places, well, it's time to look in the right place. If you're interested in the strange and the supernatural, George Norrie has put together the site for you, ParanormalDate.com. Over 11,000 members currently signed up. You could become a member as well. Find friends, and perhaps you'll find the real one for you, somebody that'll be as interested in the strange and fringe part of the world as the rest of us. So go check that out, and it's free to just check it out and sign up. If you decide you'd like to stay, use the code word George, and you'll get deep discounts to become a member of ParanormalDate.com. Check all that out, and check out CoastToCoastAM.com for more information on the best in overnight talk radio. We'll be back with more Ursula Bielski, more haunting stories, and we'll find out from Ursula what she thinks is truly one of the most terrifying spots in the Chicagoland area next on Coast to Coast AM. We have open phone lines. It'll begin in about 20 minutes. So if you'd like to call in with any of your questions, thoughts, concerns, or if you have your own paranormal encounters you'd like to share, I would love to hear them. As a matter of fact, if there are any police officers out there that have had experiences with the paranormal, I'd love to hear your stories tonight. So give us a call. We'll release that phone number in a little bit, but we encourage you to be a part of the show with us this evening. For the remainder of the show, we have Ursula Bielski, and we'll be talking to her about haunted Chicago and some of the crazy stories from around there. Ursula, what do you think is the most active and haunted and frightening place in the Chicagoland area?
Oh, good question, and one that we get a lot. The answer I always have is the Congress Plaza Hotel. It's not one that heard by a lot of people or known by a lot of people around the world, but for investigators in Chicago, that's what we always say. The Congress Hotel, for people who have been to Chicago, it's right on Michigan Avenue. It is right at the lakefront. And it was built as one of the hotels to accommodate visitors to the World's Fair of 1893. And it's one of the only structures that's still standing today that was built for that purpose. And it's got about 800 rooms in two towers. And it's known to Chicago investigators as one of the most haunted places in Chicago. And I happily was one of the first people to investigate it about 7 or 8 years ago with our team from Chicago Hauntings. And over the course of two nights, we found no less than 17 haunted rooms in the hotel and two haunted ballrooms as well. Now, the building actually has a lot more notoriety than generally people think it has because it was immortalized by Stephen King in his short story 1408, which became the film starring John Cusack as the sort of jaded paranormal investigator who loses his daughter at a young age and is trying to find a place that's genuinely haunted so that he is convinced of the afterlife so he can see his daughter again. And he hears about this high-rise hotel in New York City that's so haunted that there's a room that they don't let out anymore because everyone that checks in commits suicide in the room. Well, Stephen King has gone on record saying that the inspirations for 1408 were the Hotel Del Coronado in San Francisco, which is famously haunted, and an unnamed old large hotel in a huge Midwestern city, which many people have connected to Chicago's Congress Hotel. And I have, just from sources that are friends of mine that are friends with Stephen King, that it's the Congress Hotel that he talked about. Now, the Congress Hotel does have a room on the sixth floor that has been drywalled over, and they left all the furniture inside the room. So if you go to that hallway where the room is, if you go to the room where the hallway was, you can actually see the old lintel over where the door was and where the baseboard has been patched together where the old door frame was. And the window washers tell us that they left the furniture in the room. And there's all sorts of legends about the hotel. And many people think that this haunted room is on the 12th floor in the North Tower where all the haunted rooms are. But it's not. It's on the sixth floor. And the only thing I could think about when I heard about this room being actually walled up, the Congress Hotel, was a story that I had read about the original Exorcist case in St. Louis. That case that happened around little Robbie Doe, and I know that the name is public now, but I'm not going to use it. The room in Alexian Brothers Hospital in St. Louis where the exorcism happened, and this was the boy that was exorcised as part of the original Exorcist book and film case. The furniture that was in the room where the exorcism happened was taken out of the room by the Archdiocese of St. Louis and put into seclusion at a storage facility across from Scott Air Force Base. This was documented by, I think it was Thomas Allen who wrote the book Possessed. He was in possession of one of the original Exorcist diaries from the case. And he said the Archdiocese did this because the church believes that when an exorcism happens, the objects in the room where the exorcism occurs can take in that demon or that spirit that's exorcised. And so the object can end up being possessed. So they can't destroy these items because it might just release the spirit back into the atmosphere to cling onto someone else. So they have to actually close these things off, bind them with prayers and close them off. So apparently all of the furniture from the room where the original exorcism happened are closed off in this storage facility at Scott Air Force Base, or across from Scott Air Force Base. So this is the only thing I can think about, because we have folklore at the Congress Hotel in Chicago saying that there was an exorcism that occurred in the building, and we don't know anything else about it. We don't know anything about the hauntings of the Congress Hotel. It's very mysterious. But we do know that this room has actually been drywalled over and walled off with the furniture all in the room. And that,
well, nowadays you can get those drones. Why can't you just have a drone fly up to that window to take a peek in? If the window washers tell you that there's still furniture, it seems like you should be able to get up there and photograph it now.
Well, I think there are a number of colleagues of mine that I think have stayed in the rooms adjacent to the room, and they say they drilled holes in the walls to actually put snake cameras through into the room. So I don't know. Probably shouldn't have said that, but...
I won't tell as long as you don't. Nobody else will know about it.
No one else knows.
Yeah, we don't. That's not a good idea, folks. Don't start drilling holes in the walls. But yeah, it'd be intriguing to see what's going on there. Have they ever given any explanation for why that one room is walled off?
It's interesting. You know, the Congress Hotel. You know, you work with Ghost Adventures and Jeff Belanger and Zach and all those guys. They have tried to get into Congress Hotel to stay overnight and investigate it there. The Congress Hotel is famous for not allowing any investigations, any filming. No, you know, even our local news affiliates can't go in there on Halloween to just do a segment. They just do not allow it. So it's completely off limits. And as far as knowing the history of the place, there are only employees that are going back about 20, 25 years. So even at the time where this happened, we don't know anything about it. And the ownership, as far as we know, lives in Dubai. So we don't know anything about it. We can't talk to anyone. We can't get access anywhere. So again, very enigmatic, very mysterious.
All right. A couple of the people here had asked in email form to me during the break. You'd mentioned Bachelor's Grove Cemetery. You mentioned the event that you have coming up in October and that they'll have access. Is that open? I thought that you're not ready. I thought they kind of shy away from allowing people into Bachelor's Grove Cemetery.
It is open. The only rules are that it's accessible along the same hours that the Forest Preserve is accessible, because it's right in the middle of the Forest Preserve. So sunrise to sunset, you can go in and you can access the cemetery too. The cemetery is actually owned by the real estate office of Cook County and not the Forest Reserve District, but they work very closely together and they don't have any problem with anyone going into the cemetery as long as it's not more than 30 people at one time. So you can come and go as you please during sunrise to sunset.
And people will have access to that during your event.
They will. They will, absolutely.
Very cool. And you can find information at chicagohauntings.com and become part of our event. A lot of great speakers are going to be a part of the event. And you've got Virginia Madsen that's going to join as well, a local Chicagoan. And she was in the movie Candyman, which was based in Cabrini Green there in Chicago, wasn't it?
It was. It's such a fascinating story. You know, that's a great movie. And one of the wonderful things we're going to have done is to have Virginia talk about the connection with Candyman in Chicago. That whole story is very interesting because everyone thinks that there's no connection between, any real thing that happened in the Candyman story. But Clive Barker, who wrote the original short story on which Candyman is based, grew up in a town in England which was plagued by the actions of this kind of mythological figure that they called Purple Ackie growing up in the 1960s. And he was known to accost and sodomize young men in the town to the point where even boys didn't have paper routes. Adults had paper routes because there was this kind of, a reign of terror by this mythological figure. And people said that they had seen him be shot, be stabbed, be drowned, and he would come back to life. And he was, according to all of the accounts, he was about like a 6.5 foot tall African man that was in the town that was terrorizing all these young men. And so everyone thought this was a myth because they said that adults couldn't see Purple Ackie. And then in the early 2000s, there was an African man that was arrested, and about 150 men now in their middle ages came forward to police and said that this was the man who had tried to sodomize them or accosted them when they were growing up in the area at the time. So it's interesting because the character of Candyman is very much along the lines of this actual figure that kind of terrorized Clive Barker's town when he was growing up in England. So there's definitely a connection between the story and something in real life. And again, another instance of folklore being supposedly just folklore, but definitely having a real life connection to something that was supposedly supernatural in nature to the people that witnessed it.
Chicago, you know, a lot of people think of it and they still think of the old gangsters and the Depression era and the Prohibition era. And, you've got Dillinger went through there. You've got Scarface, Al Capone, and so many others. Is there really well-known hauntings of any of these famous celebrity gangsters, or is it a lot of hoo-ha, a lot of urban legend?
Dave, it's amazing. Some of the most prolific ghost stories in Chicago have to do with these locations. The site of the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which to this day is still unmarked, is a site where many people have experiences of seeing figures in the area, seeing lights in the area, hearing gunfire. And another very prominent location is actually Holy Name Cathedral, which is the seat of the Archdiocese of Chicago. This is this beautiful old cathedral, and it was the scene of a gunfight between Jaime Weiss, who was trying to avenge the death of Dan O'Bannon, and the henchmen of Al Capone. And there were bullet holes in the cornerstone of Holy Name Cathedral at the time of the gunfight, and they're still there today. You can still see them today because the Archdiocese of Chicago has tried to plug up these holes with mortar, and the mortar will not stay. It either will not harden or it will harden and pop out. So you can still go to Holy Name Cathedral today and still see bullet slugs in the cornerstone of the building from all of these years ago, back in the 1920s, because for some reason this mortar won't stay put.
But then on the other hand, you've got the stories of the famous shooting of John Dillinger outside of the Biograph Theater, where the telephone pole has bullet holes still in the brick wall outside, still has bullet holes in it. But they've actually replaced the wall outside and the telephone pole. But police have told me that, on occasion they'll go out and fire a round off or two into the telephone pole just for old time's sake and to get people talking about it again.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, I had a chance to investigate there with Richard Crowe about 30 years ago now, on the anniversary of Dillinger's death. And some of the local police were telling us the stories of shooting out shooting into the telephone pole. But that's a strange deal. Now, there was plenty of viewings of Dillinger showing up throughout the Biograph Theater.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about Dillinger showing up in the Biograph Theater and also out in the alley. And the alley is an interesting place, too. I talk a lot about this, strange residue that's left behind at these locations or unseen influences on people. And that alley where Dillinger was shot has been the site of three suicides between 1960 and 1980. And, it's weird. You wonder if there's something that's left behind that's kind of a downer for people that are there because of what happened. You know, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary of the Eastland disaster in July of this year, July 24th, where 844 people died on the river. And this is a location where people still walk by the side of the river and feel that they want to throw themselves into the river for whatever reason. And again, police officers tell us that there have been more suicides from the bridges that abut the disaster site of the Eastland than from all of the other bridges in Chicago combined.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Eastland. Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Eastland disaster as well, because isn't that where they took a lot of the bodies to where Oprah Winfrey's studios are now?
Right, Harpo Studios. That was the main morgue that was used. That was the 2nd Regimental Armory in 1915 when the disaster happened. So there were more than 500 bodies that were laid out side by side on the floor of Harpo Studios, awaiting being identified and prepared for burial by people. So, we continue to hear stories, even though Oprah's not there anymore, from the security guards that still work there and people that are still on staff there, that talk about the place being severely active still today with all sorts of things from full body apparitions to olfactory apparitions and equipment malfunctioning and so forth.
Right, and there's been a lot of ex-employees that have come forward saying that it's very haunted. They don't allow them to talk about it while they work there and all of that, but it's known to be extremely haunted, and that's another protected place where when Oprah owned it, I know a lot of people reached out to her to investigate or check out the claims, and she never allowed them in.
Never. But, nobody. Never. Yeah.
Terrifying place. And didn't some of the bodies go to what's known as the Excalibur nightclub as well?
That's up in the air. We still don't know if that's true or not. There was a funeral home. Colada's funeral home was right next door to the Excalibur. We don't know that about a half dozen bodies were taken there because family members were close to the funeral directors. We don't know if any of the bodies were ever taken to the Excalibur itself, the Excalibur building itself, which was the Chicago Historical Society at the time. So that's up in the air. We do know that there were people that sought shelter in the previous building that was on the location because it was also made of stone, which was rare for the time during the Great Chicago Fire, and that people died in the building at that time. But that's another, one of the most haunted structures in Chicago.
Well, Ursula, it's always a pleasure talking with you. I'll look forward to seeing you in October at your new haunted event that'll be going on. And again, I recommend anybody that's going to be spending some time in the Chicagoland area, you can sign up for the tours. You will get a great time. And there's the history, the curses, the stories behind it. We only scratched a portion of the surface this evening of all of the great legend and lore of the Illinois area, and specifically around the Chicagoland area. Thank you for joining me this evening, Ursula.
Thanks, Dave. Always a pleasure.
And again, check out the page for her tours, for her books, and to be a part of the live event coming up in the first weekend in October. I'll be a part of that as well. You can go check it out at ChicagoHauntings.com. That's ChicagoHauntings.com. When we return, open phone lines. Let's hear your stories of the paranormal. And have you ever heard of a hitchhiking ghost? Have you had any experiences? And if there's any police officers out there that have had their own experiences with the paranormal, this is the time to call in. We'll be back with more of the best in overnight talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.